On March 16, 2000, two sheriff's deputies were shot in Atlanta. Jameel Al-Amin, a Muslim leader and former Black Power activist, was convicted. But the evidence was shaky, and the whole truth didn't come out during the trial. My name is Mosi Secret, and when I started investigating this case in my hometown, I uncovered a dark truth about America. From Tenderfoot TV, Campside Media, and iHeart Podcasts, Radical is available now. Listen to the new podcast, Radical, for free on the iHeart Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a ratio. Okay, though. It's a ratio. Okay, though.
Who proposed to who? Did you propose to her?
I proposed to her.
How'd you do it?
This is funny. I ordered my ring off of a random ass website for like $200. Because I got it. There was this loud booming voice in my head. It was like, marry her. I was like, shit, okay. So it was not her. So I ordered like this cheapo ring. I said, babe, get in the car. We got to go somewhere. Because as soon as the ring came, I said, I mean, there's no reason to hold it. Got in the car, drove up Poima off of the 101 and like headed to Malibu and drove up Poima Road, found a really pretty overhang, you know, super romantic. Got out of the car. Now, mind you, I'm bougie. So I said, look out there. And I'm like, shit, it's foggy. It's really ugly outside today. Okay. I said, past those clouds is your future. Past those clouds is your future. And I said, you will not see me on a knee, but no, I'm kneeling at the heart because this is dirty and these are Gucci. And then I said, will you marry me? She said, yes. And here's what I did, right? She put the ring on and I ran across four lanes of traffic. And in my head, it was like, if I don't die right now, we're good. You know what I mean? Like, everything is real. I'm in real life right now. And I came back. She was like, what did you do? I said, listen, I've always wanted to get married just as a girl and wanting to do that. But I never thought it would actually happen because my whole life has been work. So I was like, I think I'm dreaming. Let me run across four lanes of traffic in the middle of the mountain. Came back. She put on the ring. She was like, you got me this. I was like, yeah. I got you this. She was happy with it. And then she bought her own. And then we've been finding rings ever since. We still haven't like buckled down on a ring. And for our wedding, we exchanged rings that we got from the antique store for $15 because it was so quick. I'm really bad with stuff like that.
Raven Simone has been an actress in my life since I was a kid because she was Olivia on Cosby Show. And then now That's So Raven and so many other things, and yet she doesn't really like being an actress. She dreams of leaving all this showbiz stuff behind and living on a farm with her wife and a bunch of kids and a bunch of cows. Look, this is one of the most interesting interviews I've ever had because it goes completely off the rails. About halfway through, I was like, I have no idea what I'm going to ask her next. And then it just takes a life of its own and it becomes this wonderful conversation. She's a doomsday prepper who has a ton of sieves in her garage. Her wife jumps into the conversation and we all start talking. This is truly fascinating. I love this conversation. I want you to listen to the whole thing. Go to patreon.com/Touré Show. Subscribe. It's super worth it. $5 a month. You'll get this whole episode. You'll get all of the whole 100% 60-minute version of our Wednesday episodes, the Friday Patreon exclusives. This one is worth it because it's just a fun, crazy conversation, and you help support our team. Let's go. It's the awesome and amazing and super cool, and I just love her. Raven Simone on Touré Show. So you're a lifelong actress. What do you love about acting?
I'm still asking myself that. I started at such a young age that it wasn't like I was like, I love acting at three. and then was like following my passion. It was more like, you know, I auditioned for a show, I got it, and I learned the art of sitcom and I learned comedic timing and all of that. And then after I learned that, it just kept going and going. And I'm still trying to ask myself if I love acting. I know I love making people laugh. That's what I love. And I don't really consider myself a dramatic actress. I am a comedian. But I actually love directing more. I love producing more. I love being behind the scenes more. I think, you know, after 34 years of the same, can I cuss on here? After the same shit I'm over.
Yes, please cuss. What do you hate about it?
What do I hate about acting? I hate the fact that I have to put on makeup. Back in the day, I used to wear corsets and strap down my boobs and all kinds of stuff. That was irritating. I hate just being a mannequin for other people. I have a mind of my own and I'm ready to use it.
I mean, it's kind of heavy to think that you spent your life acting and you seem torn about it. Like, it's been a good life, but I don't know about this thing.
Like I said, you know, I've been doing the same thing since I was 3 years old and I'm 35. It's like maybe, you know, I need to change up.
Why did you start? How did you start on this journey of acting? You auditioned for, was it Ghost Dad when you were 3 or 4?
Yeah, I, the whole journey started with modeling. Actually, I was a baby model. Those Pampers was killing it on the runway. And then I auditioned for Ghost Dad and I didn't get the part, but the people who were casting for Ghost Dad cast for the Cosby Show. And, I got on that show.
So you had no idea what it was you weren't like, I want to do that. You were like,
the story goes that my parents told me that I said I wanted to do what Rudy can do. I can do what Rudy can do. And then it just kept going and going and going. And then I also remember waking up like at 15, like, I want to be a painter. I want to be a this, I want to be a that. So I think it's just, you know, following the dreams and whichever one hits, you stick with until that check depletes.
I mean, you know, my family and I, we watched The Cosby Show from episode 1. So I remember the moment you arrived and it was this amazing breath of fresh air. And it was like, we're dying with every time she opens her mouth. Oh my God, she's so fucking cute. Ah, I can't take it.
What happened?
What was that like for you when you're in the midst of, like, you know, like all these grown-ups kind of telling you like, hey, can you do, because there were definitely times when you were given like an adult move, like slap your head, like say the line and slap your head, but you do it in the wrong order. So it's clear, like, she was told, like, this is what adults do. Like, you say the line, and you slap your head, but you slap your head and then say the line. And I'm like, it's super cute and it works, but it's like, you know, so I'm like, just what was like that? What was all that like for you?
That is I can't remember.
Okay. You don't remember the Cosby Show?
No.
Really?
Truly. But I also just have a bad memory in general, but I don't remember the Cosby Show. I don't remember it.
Is this because you blocked it out or because it's just, you were so young and you just.
Here's my theory. My theory is at a very young age, I had to remember multiple lines every week, purge and learn new lines every week, purge and learn new lines from 3 years old to now. And I believe that my brain is really good at purging once something is done in order to make room for the next. This is not medical. This is totally me, like,
right,
figuring why I have no memory. Like, I was talking to someone the other day. They're like, don't you remember when we went here and we went here, blah, blah. I was like, no, sorry. They were like, it's last week. I'm like, I don't remember. But, and I know that sucks to have for an interview, but
no.
You know, it's just the truth. You know, some people can really remember when they're younger and have these massive memories. And the only thing, and, you know, for the longest time, I remembered what the floor looked like, but now it's just a memory of a memory. It's not even like a true, it's not even a true thought process now. I mean, everything is just a memory of a memory. I don't really remember truly.
That's interesting. You know, your longevity is really incredibly impressive because I was a fan of yours when you were a baby. My daughter watches your shows now. She has no idea of your past. She comes to you fresh as, and I'm like, I can't believe that Olivia is the mom on the show. Now I feel really freaking old. Like, what the hell? But whatever.
Oh, you feel old. Okay.
But, you know, how is it that you have managed to have this longevity and, like, you know, have the audience of me and my mom, like, loving you at one stage of your life, and now my daughter loves you at a different stage of your life? And, like, how have you done that?
It's been miracles. It's been miracles left and right. It's been fantastic people in my corner that keep it pushing. It's been the mentality that, you know, this is my career and I have to keep going. I have to find new things to be a part of, and watching many people's career over the years, wanting to emulate people, wanting to be a part of the rat race just as much as anybody else, and just, you know, continuously finding projects that cater to family so that I can be in the homes of those. You know, I can only attribute it to, you know, like I said, the people in my corner and the people who hire me. It's just like, thank you so much. I think there is a formula to sitcoms, and I've been really fortunate enough to learn it and to harness that and share my knowledge and hopefully interject that into the shows that I do.
Well, tell me some of your philosophies or ideas around doing the work and doing it well so that the audience is super entertained. Like, you talk about a formula, but, like, what is it that you've learned that you're trying to emit?
So for me, it's really making sure, one of the sentences that I learned was, if it's not funny on the page, it's not going to be funny on the stage. And I went through a point in a couple seasons ago where I was like forcing material, like knowing the quirky ways of acting in order to make a joke work / push it further, to the point where someone came up to me, they were like, could you raven it up a little bit? And when they said that, I was like, stop, let's come back to basics, you know, because you continue to push. Another thing that I do, and I told my kids, there was a season I was like, nobody laugh unless it's funny. But this is where the joke goes. I said, but if they don't hit the joke, why laugh? You're giving us false, you know, confirmation. Like, we need to hit our joke correctly so that it works. And finally, you know, you'd hear laughter. And it works because being on a kid's show, you have all these adults behind the camera and in the audience, actually not in the audience, but we have behind the camera and, you know, working on the show. So if we made adults laugh with kid comedy, then I knew it was funny and not just boom, boom, because it's supposed to be. And so, yeah, it makes us work a little bit harder on the actor side. It makes the writers work a little bit harder. It makes everybody work a little bit harder, but it makes adults laugh sometimes. And that's when I'm like, done, check mark. And, you know, it's just like, I remember when we finished That So Raven and I had some time off, I quote unquote retired. Well, I did retire, but whatever. I remember having people over my house after like a month of not working for the first time in my life. And I would walk into a room, I'd have a conversation, I hit all my beats, and then I would leave the room on a joke. But I'm like, this is not stage, crazy lady. This is like real life. But I'm like, wow, I've been doing this so long. Like, it kind of went into my normal back and forthness with humans. But there, you know, there's formulas to everything.
I've seen that in my own life where I'm like, you're interviewing your friend, you're not really talking to them. Can you just have like a conversation without it being like an interview? And like, yeah, let me go back to trying to be a normal person and not like, here's my interviewer, here's my big idea expressed in a perfect paragraph. I'm like, let's stop performing and just be. But it's tricky when you're used to being on stage.
Yeah, it's really hard. I'm glad that you said that because it doesn't make me feel so crazy now.
You're not.
But it is hard. You know, we do it. We do it to the best of our ability. We give it 100%. We get praise for it. And it becomes a part of us, even though it's only for a certain amount of time in the day. But it becomes so ingrained, you can't help but to bleed over into real life. But it was really great for me to have that moment after That's So Raven to really come back to center, even though Corona has been very, very sad for many, many, many people. It helped me again ground, because I was starting to fly into that, well, what do you say? Calm down, Raven. Go sit down somewhere. So it's good to ground.
Are you able to help the kids you work with because of your experience? Like, do you worry about them? Or are you able to shape their experience? Because you're like, I've been where you are. I don't want you to do that. I don't want you to go there. I want you to...
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as best as I can without being their parent.
Right, right.
But, you know, working with the kids on Raven's Home, I had a great rapport with the parents at the very beginning. And I said, listen, I don't have kids, but I have a brother, and I'm going to treat your child like family and give them what I know and watched over them. And hopefully when the show ends and they all turn 8, or when they turn, you know, 21 for the first time and they're drunk off their ass, they'll call me because I'm auntie and they know I got their back. But I, you know, every day I was like that. I was like the big sister / auntie, where I joke with them for up until a point, and then I'm like, all right, let's go. And they're like, no, we gotta go. And it's funny because, you know, this is Disney. So they were like, be careful, be nice. I'm like, oh, I'm nice. Trust me. I'm real nice. I'm Black woman, Southern nice. You're welcome.
Sometimes you need stories that reflect the community, the culture, the world that you love. You can get some of that on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, where you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and how to create world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is an account of what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective, and diving into the things that we care about and the stories we want to hear that center Black perspectives. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes that celebrate the Black experience. Turn on NPR and listen to Black Stories, Black Truths, because Black stories make up what it means to be in America, and stories should never be told without us. Listen to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR wherever you get your podcasts. Back in 2018, Trump's Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported the parents back to their home countries while keeping the kids in the United States, separating and destroying hundreds of families. It was heartbreaking. And years later, hundreds of families still have not been reunified. I recently learned about an organization that's trying to make a difference. It's El Atrolado, and it works to reunify families, providing holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in America and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice. They've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once they're reunited, they help each family find legal representation, housing, counseling, whatever they need to get on their feet. Imagine having your child ripped from your arms just because you went to another country seeking a better life, and you never know when or if you'll ever see them again, and not ever seeing them again. We can't let family separations go on. It's inhumane. And if you're like me, and you believe that families belong together and immigration should not separate them, then join me in supporting El Atrolado and donate today. You can find the link to donate to El Atrolado in the description of this episode, or go to gun.fm/charity and donate today.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities both in person and virtual. The best way to get involved, fill out an application at their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer. Elotrolado, ELOTROLADO.org/volunteer.
Influencer. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First.
Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
You seem so well-adjusted and, like, you know, not, like, full of yourself and, like, perspective. And, like, so many people who had success as children don't get that. And their adult life kind of spirals out of control. How is it that you've been able to handle adulthood in a much more, I don't know, mature, let's say mature way, whereas other people have not?
I, again, have to give praise to my parents for whooping my ass when needed be. I have to give praise to all my friends who cuss me out when need be, and my therapist, and now my wife. It's a struggle, you know? It's a journey to grow up without anybody watching you in these times, yeah. And it's a struggle growing up with people watching you. However, I have a mentality that is, every day is a page in my autobiography, and I can say that because of the life that I lead, and any wrong move is like a stain on a chapter. So while some people will take that and be like, well, don't you have fun? Do you feel like you're boxed in? Yeah, sometimes I do. But when I look back and I'm like, well, you know what? I'm glad I didn't walk out of that club drunk and half of my bra off, because I don't have to worry about the backlash later. Yes, it sucks because I'd rather have 18 shots and not worry, but I didn't. And you know what? I'm happy about it. And I'll do it at home where nobody sees. There's a balance. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you look back on your childhood like it was cool, or like I kind of lost it, or like, what do you think?
I think everybody has a different childhood, no matter where you grow up and what you do. I mean, what is childhood? I went to school. I got dumped. No, I never got dumped. I dumped them, but that's another conversation. I didn't get invited to prom. You know, I didn't even go to prom.
Really?
I didn't think about a prom.
How did that happen?
Not good. Huh?
How did that happen?
I was probably on a tour or something. I was working. But, you know, this is just my life, and this is what I was raised for. I was always told that, you know, since you started so young, this is just the life you have to lead, and you can cry over the fact that you don't have this life or that life, or you can suck it up and handle shit.
If you had kids, would you let them get into the business, or would you say no, 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 no?
No, they're not allowed to get into the business until they can drive themselves to work.
Right.
They can't get in the business unless, you know, they have lawyers that I don't, you know, that I trust. I wouldn't put my kids in the industry. But at the same time, if they wanted to, I would help them. But that's not, I wouldn't be like, oh, look at my child. Like, no, I definitely, they, no.
You said your parents whooped you. Did you actually get corporal punishment?
Next question.
I mean, I did, so I'm not going to call your parents out and not call my parents out. They literally whooped my butt. I mean, like, you know, that's what Black parents did then. They didn't know any better, and now they know better.
Now they know better.
Now you know better, you do better. But, like, you know, shit, man, you know. But without the specific of the punishment method, what is the sort of thing that you are doing that gets folks to say, hey, Raven, come on?
Well, my parents read my diary.
Wow.
And they were pissed. Well, one of them was pissed. So there you go. There's one. I was on punishment for a year.
A year? For what?
What they read in my diary. They were pissed. And then it was funny because they took me out of school. They found, well, they found it, read it, took me out of school and took me to Fuddruckers.
Okay.
Like a really good burger place back in the day.
Yeah.
I can no longer eat at Fuddruckers. Like, I can't even go there.
Because
I get like hives.
It reminds you.
It's, I'm triggered.
You're extremely funny. Talk to me about about comedic timing and, like, you know, how you do it.
I have no idea. It is what it is. You know what I mean? It's like, it is what it is. I watched so many people and worked with, I got to work with Martin Lawrence, Eddie Murphy, Bill Cosby, Mark Curry. You know, it's Rondell Sheridan, Takiya. Like, I've been so fortunate in being surrounded by genius comedians. And I just shut up and listened and played off of them, you know. And I still have so many people that I want to work with. I need to soak up some of that Will Ferrell life. I need to soak up some Adam Sandler. One day I'm going to get there. Even if I'm not acting, I'm going to soak up that world because I love comedy. You know, I love it. I was born into it. It brings serotonin to my skull. Like, I like it.
You've been on so many of the most iconic black shows the past few decades. And we started to touch on Cosby, but Hanging with Mr. Cooper, it's a huge show for black people. And you were really a nice part of that show. Do you remember that show?
Those were my ugly years, meaning I was so ugly on that show to
myself.
Not true. And I also don't feel like I was that funny on the show. I was like, oh, you know, that's the time period where you're like 7 to 11 years old. I'm like just starting to look at girls' boobs, but not know why. I'm having a mental change. I'm like, am I fat, but I'd rather eat this bagel? Like, a whole journey was going on. But what I remember are the people. I remember Marklyn Baker, our director. I remember Holly and Sandra and Marquise and Mark, and I'm still in contact with a lot of them. And it's funny, I remember my teacher and things like that, but the scenes, gone.
But
they disappeared each week.
What'd you learn working with Mark? Because he's a significant comedic figure. He's not out that much right now, so folks may not remember, but like, huge comedic figure, huge comedic voice.
If you forget Mark Curry, I don't want to even talk to you. Like, Mark Curry was TGI Friday gold. He was absolutely crazy. And what I learned from him was to use your body. He always was doing stuff, like always doing stuff, always just making the words match his vocabulary, which I do now. Even if it's not a true word, he's just funny, and he's still like, he's always doing something crazy. And it stayed with me that, you know, especially for a girl, a lot of the times as females, be pretty, be poised, keep yourself together. And I don't have those tones in my head. I have, you better go 3,000% on a fall or a, oh, just in case, because the guys do it. Why can't I?
Amen. Amen. I feel like that vibe comes through on Blackish, right? And there's not like the physical comedy like you're talking about, but like, you definitely walk in the scene like, I don't give a fuck. And like that energy like radiates. And I'm like, yes, I like her. She's crazy. What's up?
Yeah, it's funny because I was working on that show. It was the first, I believe I can say this, the first single camera comedy show I had been on. And I kind of get nerves when I do a movie because I'm like, oh, we got to stop and go. The comedy flow is not the same for me. I'm like, I like to do a whole scene. I'm just used to it. But working with them, it's always a blast. And my normal RBF is really captured. Resting bitch face is really captured on that show. I think they made me feel comfortable with just being myself. And normally I really don't.
You don't feel comfortable being yourself normally.
Normally, because it's not the uppity girl that you've seen these whole years when people say action. You know, I'm not. And I think people are starting to learn that, especially during Corona when I was on my Instagram and now my face is, unless it's like 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm hyped. But otherwise, I'm really kind of a Daria character.
So there's a big difference between the girl we've seen, the Raven and those sort of things, and who you really are. Like the Raven on stage and who you really are. It's a big difference.
Yeah, Raven on stage, even prior to Corona, even in interviews, because I know what I understood that, hey, what's up? How are you? Nice to see you. I can turn it on in a heartbeat, but I'm tired of that show.
So the real you is more like what?
I'm more of a dude. I'm more like kind of doomsday preppers kind of a person. I'm a chef. I'm an artist. But, you know, I'm chilling in the cut. I'm chilling.
Wait a minute. You're a doomsday prepper?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got multiple hazmat suits, and I have charcoal and sieves and cheesecloth just in case I got to filter the water. It's real. Bae! How many sieves do I have?
What do you mean a sieve? You mean like to like put dirt in and to get like...
Yeah, baby. Can you bring a sieve?
What is the value of a sieve? What do you...
So it has small holes, right? Yeah. So it drains well. So then you put the cheesecloth on top of it and you put some charcoal and then you put water that's unhealthy. And hopefully the thought process is it's a filter. I have all kinds of garlic oil and ointments and stuff. I'm just like, I'm a little bit of a witch over here.
So if we went off the grid tomorrow, you have food for what, a year, 2 years? How long could you go?
Yeah, no, I don't keep food like that, but I do have water. Come here, I'm trying to show off my sis gold face. This is Tori, I say. Well, I'm on an interview right now.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Sorry, I have no idea.
It's no, okay. Say hi. Great.
Oh, yeah, come say hi, babes. No, this is fantastic. This is my life. No, seriously. You're going to love her. Say hi. This is my golden wife.
Hi.
Okay, the problem with this mask, though, I usually don't look this like erect.
Yeah.
But it's falling off. It's like sliding off my face. So
go handle that, babes.
You know, so lovely to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
These little fucks.
Thank you for stopping by.
There's 16 more packs, and I didn't say six. I said 16 more packs of those in the garage. If you need more,
six.
It's a journey. I'm learning. I'm learning how to hoard.
Why do you need a sieve for when we go off the grid?
Listen, you can do so much with a sieve. Water.
It's gonna clean. Oh, it's gonna clean the water.
Yeah, it helps clean the water with the charcoal and the cheesecloth. And then, I there's a lot of things. I mean, if I needed to make bricks, I can sieve all of the little rocks out of it. It's a lot. It's also just a really incomplete purchase off of Amazon. Why?
Do you have a bomb shelter?
I need one. As soon as we buy land, I'm making one. Like, I'm super serious. But I live in California. You don't want to dig underneath the ground. You're going to, like,
die. Here's one of your fans.
Hello! How are you? Good. Nice to see you. What's your name? Hey, Farrah. Nice to meet you.
I watch you on Raven.
Thank you.
So, do you have generators?
I have solar panels. I have a battery backup because I have a Tesla, so I got to make sure that's charged. The Tesla has the HEPA filter. I have multiple bacterial wipes. You know, it's random things, but for me, it works.
Okay. So the philosophy behind the prepper, is it that the government will go nuts and you need to be prepared? Is it that the grid will fail and you need to be prepared? Is that another country will invade? And you, like, what will trigger the need for these things?
Let's just say there was a weird alert that a pandemic was coming. I never went to the grocery store. I was prepped. I was ready. I was ready to go. I had big bags of flour. I had beans. I had everything was dried. I made so much damn chili. It was great. Yeah, it's anything. I mean, listen, we are a weird microcosm, I guess you can say, just Earth in general and people in charge of it and mass companies in charge of our food. Like, when I finally get out of LA, I will have a full garden. I will have my cow and my pig. I will have it. Okay. Not going to catch me outside.
We live in a world where you can get anything you need delivered to your door thanks to DoorDash. If you don't want to do the dishes or you feel a little sick, let DoorDash bring dinner tonight. My family uses DoorDash all the time because it connects us to our favorite restaurants without us having to drive. Last night, we got some Indian food for my wife, some gumbo for me, and sushi for the kids. And everyone was happy, and we didn't have to do the dishes. The process of ordering was quick and easy, and I love DoorDash for real. So I was so happy to do this for them because I'm a customer, because I know DoorDash is your door to more. Must be over 21 to order alcohol. Alcohol available only in select markets. DoorDash, your door to more. Download the DoorDash app now to get almost anything delivered. In my mind, the greatest author of the 20th century is Toni Morrison. And her greatest novel is Song of Solomon. A mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that is gorgeously written and has captivated readers around the world. The protagonist, Milkman Dead, was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt to fly. For the rest of his life, Milkman is trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and find the place of his family's origin, she introduces an entire cast of strivers and liars and assassins and the inhabitants of an amazing, beautiful, fully realized black world. The New Yorker said Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personalities. Toni Morrison is a genius. She's one of the greatest writers of her time, of the century, and Song of Solomon is her greatest book, in my opinion. It's a must-read that will ignite your imagination and show you what the best possible fiction writing is like. And it's a timeless tale that will stay with you after you've turned its final page. When you get to the climax, you will feel it in your heart. Available now at tonimorrison.com or wherever books are sold.
About that.
So you do have months of food ready at any time.
No, I do not have months of food.
So you said you
I have didn't... months of vitamins and supplements, like garlic oil and oregano oil and bleach, like the random things. And then when it comes to, I'm ready to garden, I'm ready to suckling and all that kind of stuff. Okay, I don't have the canned food.
What up, y'all? It's Toure, author of I Would Die For You, Why Prince Became an Icon. And in just a few weeks, we're going to drop an epic 8-episode podcast about Prince called Who Was Prince, where we talk to his girlfriends, his musicians, his engineers, his managers, all sorts of people who were close to him to find out who he really was. Who was Prince? Find out on June 19th. In the meantime, follow Who Was Prince wherever fine podcasts are streamed.
I just bought this just yesterday. I bought this after much research, this protein supplement that is organic and like nothing, like no soy, no dairy, no this, no GMO, da, 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 and it contains 50 superfoods. And I was very proud of myself, like, because I had to do a ton of research to get to that, to find, because there's only like a million options. And you're like, should I use LeBron's? Should I use Tom Brady's? Should I use this one? That, no, that one's
cool. That's only the sports people.
Right. Well, no, that started me, but then it was like, can I trust LeBron? And I'm reading reviews, and then, okay, everybody said it's good, but it's expensive, blah, 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 blah. And it took me a million, like, this one's bullshit. That one you can't, like, that one. But then, I'm very proud of myself. So help me though. Like, what are important, essential supplements that we should be taking?
Well, first, I need to know the name of the supplement that you bought, because I think that's amazing.
Organia, organic. Hold on, let me look at my Amazon thing real quick. I think that the brand was Organia.
And, yeah, I'd like to know that. I think that a protein powder on hand is super awesome because you can put it in foods.
Organic, plant-based protein plus superfoods powder, vegan, non-dairy, lactose-free, no sugar added, gluten-free, soy-free, non-GMO, creamy chocolate fudge.
Inside of it, because there's nothing in
there's
it.
There's nothing in it. What could pop? What is in it? It said all the things that are not in it. What's in it? God, let me look at the label.
It's like,
I mean, pea protein, brown rice protein, chia seed, guava, holy basil, amia fruit, lemon extract, beet, carrot, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, green pepper, celery, nice. Green onion, turmeric. I'm that. Millet, amaranth, buckwheat, quinoa, chia.
That's everything.
Yeah, all these berries, all these organic sprouts, organic greens and grasses, spinach, kale, cabbage, all this stuff that I would not eat.
I'm gonna get that.
It's really good. I haven't had it yet, but it seems like.
But that sounds amazing. I'm totally gonna get that.
I know. Well, I'm asking you. Well, you've been here in this supplement world. What should we be?
So I make sure that I have. Like I said, garlic on lock, oregano oil on lock, lentils, quinoa, all the dried grains that don't really go bad for a long time. I make sure that I have vitamin D stuff. Like I have this really cool vitamin D spray, and then Babes takes vitamin D pills. Rikishi mushroom, R-E-I-K-I-E-S-A. I don't know how to spell it. Anyway, it's a mushroom. And, oh my goodness. Now I got to go through my list of things. There's some other things that are in the holistic area that I keep on tap and available that you can take on a regular. Oh, chlorophyll is really good to have in your system.
Chlorophyll.
The protein powder. Yeah, chlorophyll.
As opposed to chlorophyll.
I got gas, so I make sure that I stay chlorophylled up.
Who proposed to who? Did you propose to her?
I proposed to her.
How'd you do it?
This is funny. Well, I ordered my ring off of a random ass website for like $200. Because I got it. There was this loud booming voice in my head. It was like, marry her. I was like, shit, okay. So it was not her. So I ordered like this cheapo ring. I said, babe, get in the car. We got to go somewhere. Because as soon as the ring came, I said, I mean, there's no reason to hold it. Got in the car, drove up Poima off of the 101 and like headed to Malibu. And drove up Poima Road, found a really pretty overhang, you know, super romantic. Got out of the car. Now, mind you, I'm bougie. So I said, look out there. And I'm like, shit, it's foggy. It's really ugly outside today. Okay. I said, past those clouds is your future. Past those clouds is your future. And I said, you will not see me on a knee, but no, I'm kneeling at the heart because this is dirty and these are Gucci. And then I said, will you marry me? She said, yes. And here's what I did, right? She put the ring on and I ran across four lanes of traffic. And in my head, it was like, if I don't die right now, we're good. You know what I mean? Like, everything is real. I'm in real life right now. And I came back. She was like, did you, what did you do? I said, listen, I've always wanted to get married just as a girl and wanting to do that. But I never thought it would actually happen because my whole life has been work. So I was like, I think I'm dreaming. Let me run across four lanes of traffic in the middle of the mountain. Came back. She put on the ring. She was like, you got me this? I was like, yeah, I got you this. She was happy with it. And then she bought her own. And then we've been finding rings ever since. We still haven't like buckled down on a ring. And for our wedding, we exchanged rings that we got from the antique store for $15 because it was so quick. I'm really bad with stuff like that.
For more from me and Raven, where the conversation gets crazier and crazier, join us over at patreon.com/Touré Show. Thank you so much to Raven Simone for a great interview. And thanks to you for listening. And thanks to our super producers, Britt, Marcus Harkis, Noel, Sam Montes, Jason Reynolds, Gerville Calais, Michelle Brenda Koch, Kathy F., Dr. Keena Murphy, Earl Dorsey, and Theotokos. Touré Show gives you fuel to power your dreams because you can use your dreams like a rocket ship to blast you into a life you never imagined. You can make your dreams a reality, and this show can help. You can find me on Twitter at Touré and on Instagram at Touré Show and on Patreon at patreon.com/Touré Show. Touré Show is written by me, Touré, and produced by Jackie Garofano. Our editor is Ryan Woodhull. Our photographers are Chuck Marcus and Shanta Covington. Our booker is Claudia Jean. And we're distributed by DCP Entertainment. And we will be back on Friday and on Wednesday with more amazing guests because the man can't shut us down.